he pulls out this laser drill and says,
this is awesome. He says,
you know how I'm going to get you to talk? I'm going to burn your teeth.
I'm going to use this laser on your tooth. It's much like old dental equipment. You wouldn't know. Ha, ha, ha.
I can't help thinking, somewhere in the universe, there has to be something better than me. Has to be.
All right, here we are. That was kind of a weird one.
Trail. We're back.
We're back.
You kind of juked me out there. Did you dip the volume and then it came back?
It's that same thing where I couldn't get it to turn off and then all of a sudden it just stops. So,
but here we are. Oh boy, we're
back
here.
Back
for another one.
Two in a row. Man, this is good. This is like we're getting
into a groove or something. Podcast hosts. It's like we're hosting our own show and stuff.
That's right.
Although, here we are. Yet another time where you packed up your whole kit.
Oh my gosh.
Took
this
it on a
just,
trip.
And this then is getting ridiculous.
It didn't even take it out of the bag.
Yeah. I think from now on, I'm just going to use my phone. If for some reason there's an opportunity, I'm just going to use my phone next time. And that'll probably prove the point that, now we can do it. And then
we can do it.
It'll just sound weird.
Well, you got
anyways.
Reminds me, you got that stupid microphone thing that it can only work in either, it's either muted or you talk, right?
Yeah, right. It sounds really good when I talk, but I can't hear anything person that I'm talking to says. So it's like, well,
just quick unplug it, plug it back in and just keep plugging it. That is literally the dumbest thing.
It was
a product for its only intent could be, for podcasting, right? You have listening is half of what you're doing, right?
Yeah, and we're talking about a host mic. Yeah, it's a Shure microphone that attaches to an iPhone, and the intention was to use it at some point. And then, of course, I held on to it too long, and I can't return it, so I just stuck with it. But it did come with this really sweet mount, so I can put my phone on a little mini tripod, and then I can like use it for stuff. So that's kind of nice. So like if I need to talk on speakerphone or something and don't need it flat, I can put it on that thing and talk. You know, sometimes I have to do that for real life work. But
just anyways, a really expensive version of a little plastic clip.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if I had an iPhone case with a pop up thing, it would just be the exact same thing.
Just that.
Exactly.
Okay. But I've been sitting on a story for a while that I've been wanting to share. Ideally, I would have shared it with some friends of ours.
Yeah. Good grief.
Here we are 50 minutes to in real time for us. This is now 50 minutes past when we were supposed to start this thing. And we were supposed to be joined by someone. Some of you may know Brian, our other co-host.
Yeah. Our trusty number three that never shows.
He was supposed to show as of 4 hours ago. He was talking about show.
He had some work he had to do. He was going to knock that out and then boom, he was going to show up. Well, it never does.
No show. Anyway, so I thought this was going to be a good story for that he'd appreciate as well, but he's just going to have to miss out on this story. And I can't remember if.
Before you get into it, like I had, so I went back to South Dakota for Thanksgiving and I had a face to face with this kid and he was going to get on with us and he's not here. So there you go.
Next
lied
time.
In my face.
What a jerk. Next time.
Yeah. Anyways, go ahead, Jen.
So when I was in South Dakota last, this was in October, I think, or September, sometime, somewhere in the, I randomly watched, Elf with my mom, Will yeah. Ferrell Christmas movie. And it reminded me, the movie, you know, it was a great movie, right? But definitely the just classic. Elf in general reminded me of a story from freshman year in college. And I can't remember if I've told you this story or not, but I went to office hours for a chemistry professor of mine. And honestly, this is a long time ago. Who knows what it was about? It doesn't matter. But one of her sons was in the office, and I come up and he's working on some kind of, I don't know, book or action figures or something. I don't know. He's 10 or less, probably less than 10, I would say.
Gotcha.
And, so I'm chatting with the professor for a good 5 or 7 minutes. Right. And the kid, completely oblivious to my existence, he's just in the zone, right? And to whatever he's doing, he's quietly doing it in the corner.
Yeah.
Very respectful, making no noise, making no fuss. Something happens, and it wasn't in response to anything that I said, but he stops playing. He looks up. He looks at me and screams, well, not screams, but he says, "Elf." We stop what we were talking about, and he says, "Elf." And the professor said, "What? What are you talking about? Look, that's an elf." And she said, "What are you talking about?" And he says, "Look at his ears. That's an elf, Mom."
That's awesome.
So, okay. So if you're watching this video, so if you typically watch these, I wear headphones, right? So maybe if you don't know me personally, you wouldn't have seen my,
right.
I don't know, the part of my head that isn't covered by headphones. So I'll take these headphones off now. Maybe this is an incentive to watch the YouTube version of this. And I'll show you what this kid screamed in my face about is calling me an elf. So I don't know, Spenny, you tell me, am I an elf? Maybe.
No, you're not an elf.
Maybe mean, not.
Partially pointy, but I don't know. I don't know.
Anyways, I always kind of had like pointy ears or whatever, right? But sure. This kid didn't even miss a awesome. Beat, looked up from whatever his wildebeest action figures or something, and he's like, "Elf! Look, Mommy, he has elf ears. He's an elf." I think that she was pretty embarrassed, but
I'm sure
I left shortly thereafter. And anyways,
that was, I mean,
you know what?
That's what kids do, though. I mean, that's,
yeah, right.
I mean, you can't take anything too harshly from those kids. But hopefully,
of course
the parent
not.
Talks to them later and says, you know, you can't say that stuff. But
The funny kind of anecdotes, especially with relation to Brian. But so I had this, I mean, she was, I took a lot of chemistry courses, right? So I knew her, and then her husband was a biology professor. So I took class with him, and, you know, I knew both of them in undergrad. And didn't really think much of them after I graduated. But then ran into both of them at Brian's wedding, because they were at the wedding. I can't remember why, but I don't know. We talked a little bit because we hadn't seen each other for a long time. But the elf story didn't come up.
Didn't I was gonna just like, no. is that one of the icebreakers they had about like sorry that my son called you an elf?
No. No, I doubt that she remembers, but man, anyways.
Well, I have a story about Brian too that kind of perked its head this weekend or this week when I was home. So,
so he said, I have a story about Brian too. And this, like, my story about Brian couldn't have been more of a stretch, right? With my elf story.
Right.
He was related so tangentially to that elf story, but
he's okay. More related on this one.
Okay.
But
okay.
So my parents, we had a house that I grew up in. They had till I think I was 20 or 21. They finally sold it, but they bought new land and they were going to build a nice house on it. But before they built a house on it, we used to go over there all the time with like four wheelers and go, you know, hang out, drive through the fields because there's no
go to the land.
Go to the land. Yeah, we'd go drive this big plot of land. But we used to do this party like 4th of July, around 4th of July. And we used to go over there and just, you know, do what you're start a fire, drink, be stupid, all that stuff.
A palooza, right?
Yeah. Yes. Palooza. Yes. A palooza. Yeah. That's what we called it. Two kegs, one hebel. Something's got to do. Is we made shirts that
said that. Okay, I have a story about the first palooza too. So okay. I can't remember what your story is though.
Okay, well, but, yeah,
please
anyway,
proceed.
So there's neighbors to my parents now that they built their house first, and we were on the land, and we're having people come late at night to the land. We're having a fire and just hanging out and drinking all that stuff. Brian was in this phase where like he was just kind of being bro-y bri and like invited people, like random people to all these stupid events and stuff. Yeah. So Brian shows up. We're just all having a good time. And then we find out Brian invited two friends and he has to go get them. And he's driving the four wheeler. He doesn't know where he is. Brian, I feel like, gets lost all the time anyways. But so he's driving this four-wheeler, and he literally drives through the backyard of the neighbor's house to go pick up some girl and some guy. So obviously I remember telling him, like, you can't go that far over. Like, that's the neighbor's house. Like, it's really late at night. You can't do that. But part of the story is like he was taking this girl on a drive and he like turned too fast and she literally flew out of the four wheeler at one point. But then the next day, my dad calls me or I talk to my dad and he's like, yeah, did you guys have some fun last night? And I was like, yeah, it was pretty fun. He's like, yeah, the neighbors called me about somebody driving a four wheeler through their yard. Brian, piece of crap. So yes, that was my story of Brian because I was driving through the same fields, but in you know,
oh, nice,
much appropriate manner.
Oh man, we had a lot of fun before that second house was built. Going back, and there were a bunch of rocks that we would always try and climb. Right with the
Jeep there was a stuff, right? there was a meadow. In the middle that you could go through, and then there was rocks that you could go rock climbing and stuff. Yeah, it's cool. Well, it's still there, but just not as accessible. There's a lot more trees and stuff. That's fun.
Well, I didn't realize that Brian went to pick people up and then flung a girl off the back of it. My story of that night was I wasn't drinking that night, and I was trying to remember how many times I did this, but so the people that came, parked kind of a ways away, right? As you were saying, they have to go get them. And so I was doing these kind of shuttle runs, so to speak, of bringing people to and from, their cars. And one time, the last time I did it was, I was bringing Sandwich and Bridget back to their cars or something. And this was pretty late at night. And at one kind of where we were kind of in this little valley kind of thing, right? There were hills around us. And at that point in the night, it was just all muddy because of so many trips back and forth and stuff. And So there are three of us on this four-wheeler, and I'm bringing us back, and we're going up this hill, and it was, I just didn't go fast enough, and we start like rolling back and tipping, and I still remember, Bridge, there's three of us on a four-wheeler, right?
Yes.
And we, I still remember Bridget saying, no, 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 no. And we like started falling backwards. And then we literally rolled over. And I remember thinking, this is going to crush all three of us. This is the middle of the night, random ass field. Jeez. And so I remember like trying to kick the four-wheeler as it was on top of us.
Of course, when we
were in Inverted, I was like trying to just double kick it with my legs. And sure enough, through some vector or angle that was predetermined prior to me kicking, right? Because my kick didn't do anything, right?
Right.
But yeah. it soared over top of all of us and like crashed behind the three of us. But now we're completely covered in mud.
Right. Right? I think
Bridget had somewhere else to be, right? She's completely covered in mud now. So,
right, didn't make it to that one.
We got the four-wheeler righted, and it's like, then I drove him back, right?
Yeah.
I still had to go out there. I mean, it was like the incident of that, the side-by-side, right? Where you and I rolled, right? And it was such a just a weird thing where it should have been way worse than it was. Right. I was so lucky that it wasn't any worse than just getting muddy.
My gosh.
The shuttle service shut down after that.
I bet.
You're either stuck or you weren't coming at that point.
Everybody's going home.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. Good. I'm glad I could connect on your story that had nothing to do with Brian, but I connected to Brian.
Somehow my story about being called an elf immediately led to Fuckapalooza.
Oh, that's awesome.
Because it was July 5th, right? That's what our grand scheme was, to try and do this annual, because we were in college, right? Our grand thing was we could do as grand get together every single year, July 5th.
Yeah, because we all went to different schools. So, right? Yeah, just to get together. Yeah,
the second year rained out. And then I was in Boston, but happened to be back and
came back.
And that was so my wife and I just started dating at that time.
Yeah. I hadn't met any of you guys. Everybody? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh God. Yeah.
Yeah. It was good.
Yeah.
It was good.
Watch this.
Okay.
All right.
Well, good trip down memory lane. And speaking of, of our, friends, classmates, as we mentioned in our last episode, one of our classmates recommended this movie to us through, what was it?
Instagram.
What was it? Instagram? Nice.
Yep. Yeah. Our friend Alex Mieland. Yep.
Friend of the show. He recommended Space Mutiny. And
Space Mutiny.
This took some effort to try and find a way to watch this.
Yep.
It is nowhere to be found. And
it is not.
And it's just original form. We looked in every streaming platform and just also random websites and stuff too. And the only thing we could find is the Mystery Science Theater 3000
version
of it. So we couldn't watch the actual thing that didn't have all the jokes and stuff. Now, I mean, it was really funny and stuff with them. So I'm not complaining or dissing that at all. Now, actually, I think that's what Alex recommended us or watched it from originally, right?
That was, his recommendation was because they dunked on it so much. So it would be fitting for us.
Yeah.
So we'll do our best. We tried not to use any of their material. Use our own original thoughts. But it was pretty funny. Let's see, give you some quick things and then we'll just jump into it. So there's no like budget on this. It's old and it wasn't really a movie. 397,000 was the box office when it came out in August of 1988. And in today's numbers, that'd be about $1 million. So
this actually went to movie theaters, huh?
Apparently.
Well, I guess so, right? Because worldwide. If a movie was made back then, it was not like it was coming out to VHS or anything. Right?
Yeah, it's interesting because the data, when it talks about box office, says it made 397,000 US Canada. And then when it says world, it also says the same amount. So I don't know if that means it just never didn't go anywhere else. But rightfully so, probably.
Yeah.
The director of this is David Winters. And David Winters is known for, on IMDb, for four movies. And the first one is West Side Story. He's uncredited. So he's unknown. He's credited on IMDb for West Side Story, yet he's uncredited in the movie. And that's what he's known for.
I wonder if it's like one of those things. I can't remember what movie it was when you were talking about how directors and stuff will use a pseudonym.
Oh, just
when their material is terrible, right? I wonder if Alan this guy Smithy? Used a pseudonym,
Alan Smithy,
for West Side. Yeah, would you say West Side Story?
Yes, credited, West Side Story. Uncredited. He was uncredited. I think it doesn't look like he was actually like a main like writer or anything, but he was in West Side Story. But it's marked as uncredited. Anyways,
oh. Just a guy in the background
for Space Mutiny. He actually. Space Mutiny, he tried to release it under Alan Smithy, but his contract wouldn't allow it.
So he tried to do the thing.
Yeah. He did. He tried to do it. But then the two other movies he's known for is Dancin', It's On, and Welcome to Something. Anyways, I forgot to write the rest of it.
Just so irrelevant.
But they did. One of the other facts was that the Mystery Science Theater 3000. This was like one of the most popular episodes that they ever did. Like how funny it was. So, if you want to check it out, I learned that it's on Netflix, so you can look it up on there. I think it's episode. It's season. To episode 17 if it's still on Netflix. So if you want to check that out.
It's also on YouTube for free.
And it's on YouTube for free. I don't know if that's, you know, the legal way to do it, but I guess it's on there. It's been on there for 11 years, so never mind.
It's on there.
Let's do it. I'll do a synopsis and then we'll get into it. All right. Make sure you have enough wax for your floor buffer for this one. Space Mutiny is a story about a distant future where the Earth becomes overpopulated, so they make a giant ship called the Southern Sun to give them a new home. Kalgan and a group of evil men decide to sabotage the ship they are on so they can sell it for scrap and make all the people on board slaves. They unfortunately never anticipated Dave Ryder to teleport onto the ship and cause total chaos for the entire Kalgan clan. Ryder becomes commander, but never becomes commander. They throw him a cocktail party to celebrate with a naked woman. Ryder immediately crashes in and banging the commander's daughter. There's an epic battle of bumper cars, people constantly falling off railings, and lots of printer paper with data. Eventually, Ryder destroys everyone and saves the Southern Sun.
That was good. That was really good.
I had to make sure I stumbled through it.
Yeah. okay. Fucking movie.
Okay, I didn't even mention
the Beleriand ones.
The Beleriand.
not. Okay. Okay. So.
Okay.
Okay. Yes. So yeah, the Earth has become overpopulated or whatever. It doesn't matter. They make it. The exposition that they give is that the inhabitants, the crew of this spaceship, the Southern Sun, right, is
yes.
the last bit of humanity that exists, right?
Sure.
They are on a voyage to a planet 10 light years away from Earth. Okay?
Yes.
They make it, they literally say at one point, I think, that this is it. This is humanity. And they've been on this ship for generations. That's all they know, right?
Yeah. Yep.
And so, okay. If I painted that picture clearly, the people on this ship are the only humans left, right?
Yes.
And so 30 seconds into the movie, there, people on the bridge are like, oh, hey, Commander, a ship full of Balerians want to dock. They're being escorted by Viper pilots.
Yes.
And so they're like, all right, cool. You're like, all right, let them on.
Let's see what's shaking with these two.
And the daughter, the commander's daughter, instantly perks up and she says, oh, I think they have the professor on with them. Hey, Dad, ask if they have the professor on there with them. And so the commander of the ship just asks some random idiot behind a council, hey, can you ask if the professor's on the ship?
Let me check Professor Spooner?
Yeah. calling the Viper pilots, is the commander of Professor Spooner on board? Yeah, it's just Viper 1, the professor is on board. Thank you. Yes, the professor is on board Viper 1 spaceship. Okay, thanks, Dad. I better go down there and check him. And so already, within a minute of this movie starting, they're contradicting the very exposition they gave about this being the only humans in the galaxy left.
Well, yeah, and then the next scene is them being attacked with three enemy ships. the pirates? Vipers.
Oh, yes. You have random.
So you have one giant ship that has all of civilization, which they only showed like 12 people over and over and over.
Yep.
But yes, so there's.
Okay, so now within the space of 5 minutes of this movie starting, it's gone from this is the last bit of humanity on this ship. This is it. That's all there is. To so one group of people, to now up to four different groups of people. Right? There's the Balerians, just a random group of all female crew, the Viper pilots, the pirates.
Yes.
Attacking the Viper pilots, the crew of the Southern Sun, and then this mysterious professor who was apart from all of those. So five different groups of people are now in the mix. And every time that there's some other spaceship or entity or the pirates come on, they go to this tactical map display of these vector coordinates of where their ship is in relation to any other space pilots and stuff, and it shows.
Are you talking about the one with the galaxies?
It shows galaxies. They're like plotting charts between different galaxies and stuff. They're going 10 light years. That's it. And so, okay, so these three pirate pilots' ships just come in and just snipe these Viper pilots. The commander and the whole crew of the Southern Sun are all excited about, oh, you're going to go see the Viper pilots? Oh, the Viper pilots are coming. We don't want to miss those Viper pilots. And they all just get shot out of the space immediately. Except, okay, there's three Viper pilots, right? And you see all three of those ships get blown up.
Yes.
Right? And then all of a sudden, there's this vector map of the hangar, and in comes a fourth pilot, and he's coming in, he's on fire and stuff, and then it changes shot to the pilot, right? And if you're thinking of if you can imagine with us for a second what you might picture a space fighter pilot to look like and his surroundings, right? Spacesuit, probably, helmet.
Totally, yeah.
Totally enclosed helmet, but also probably really narrowly confined, right? Room for just him in his cockpit.
Sure.
And it pans to this homie in a fucking room. He's in a big ass room with dials all around him and stuff.
Yeah.
It's just the cockpit of this single seat fighter pilot spaceship, and it pans to him in a room. And I guess the professor is on board with him, right? He comes crashing into the spaceport. That's right. And then he just starts complaining. Oh, I can't get the ejector seat open. Why isn't the ejection working? And then all of a sudden he just transports. He just original Star Trek just transports out of the thing and onto the deck. And then the spaceship explodes, right?
Yes. Yes.
It explodes. But so the pilot gets transported out of there. So you see him materialize. Boom. Spaceship explodes. Captain Daughter comes running in. No, yes. No, the professor. And he says, the pilot says, first thing, it's going to blow. It literally just exploded.
It just,
he's saying it's going to blow.
It literally just kept exploding in the exact same spot, like five or six times, just the same. But yeah, he gets teleported, runs back down, grabs her and saves her.
He has no idea who she is. These are completely estranged groups of people separated by space and time.
But there's only and, the Southern Sun is the only existence of mankind.
But and so she runs in and she's like, "The professor, you didn't do anything to save him." And he gets all defensive immediately, right?
Yeah.
Not, oh, you know, it's no use. It's no, I tried. It's fine. What was I supposed to do? I couldn't do anything. Save him. You got to get over it, lady. He gets all pissed off and runs away. But okay. So we've forgotten now. We've completely glossed over the fact that
we got to go back to Calgary. He's just like walking around. And he just walks down into this, well, it looks like a warehouse because there's full sun just shining into the scene. But apparently it's supposed to be in the bowels of this ship in the engineering room.
Yeah, yeah. You know what else is just part of this ship, apart from sunlight? Brick walls.
Yeah. Yes.
Just a bunch of brick walls.
It's aesthetic.
No.
They had to do with the head.
Yeah.
So he walks in and there's a guy that's just sitting in the room, like reading some dials and stuff. And Calgon walks by and the guy's like, "Hey, Calgon, can I help you?" And he just puts down a bomb, and behind him, the guy gets arms wrapped around him, and then Calgon just shoots him. The bombs explode. And then all of a sudden there's just this huge energy loss. But there's just always, they cut to the scene of the guy in his little cockpit, just pushing buttons, and he's like, no, we just lost power, and just keeps pointing and pushing buttons over and over and over. And that's right when the homie gets beamed. But then the commander shows up, who looks like Santa Claus from Santa Claus. Like, he looks like Tim Allen from Santa Claus.
Okay, I think you're thinking of the guy. You're talking about, so the thing blows up.
Oh, is that the pilot?
That's the pilot in the room. That's what I'm talking about. He's like, no! He's pushing buttons. That's the pilot in the spaceship, but he's in a room.
Yeah, that's the part where I got a little confused. Because got it.
Yeah, but his helmet.
Either way.
You would think that he's on the space. It's just it's half dome with some like plexiglass around the eyes. Right?
Gosh.
He's in a spaceship. So,
this is the part. So they bring the Beleriand people on, like after all this sabotage and stuff. I was reading in the research that basically the movie wasn't long enough, so they just started cutting in all these Balerion scenes. That's why it makes no sense. It's just like
it adds like literally
Spencer's,
nothing.
It's like the Spencer Gifts orb where you touch mm-hmm. it and then it has showed the fingers that are like the yep. electricity comes through.
Yeah, yeah.
But that, it's I just, mean, that's it.
It's just a group of women dancing, interpretive dancing around.
Yeah,
right.
That's it.
And they're you come to find out that they're kind of like maybe doing some telepathy.
Well, yeah, to, they don't talk, right? They just use telepathy to communicate.
To communicate, people. And I guess they're so they're. We'll just kind of wrap them up now. Their whole existence in this movie. So yes. there's a group of mutants, right? This is space mutiny. So there's a group on board that are going to mutiny, right? Led by Calgary.
Yep.
And around that same time, the Balerians show up and they start doing their mind reading telepathy stuff. The only thing you see them doing is dance.
Yep.
And like, at one point they get in the dreams of some of the mutineers and they have yep. them come in. Right. And then they do yeah. some stuff behind the scenes, interpret that what you will, but it results in those mutineers that were kind of seduced, I guess, by the Balerians
yeah.
to just die. Right. So yeah. if they were supposed to like kind of get in their heads about, hey, maybe you shouldn't mutiny. The only thing that resulted in that is the mutineers just killing the other mutineers that were seduced.
Yep.
And then they dream seduce the commander to say something. I honestly can't even remember right now. Nothing happens. And then that's just it for them.
No. Yeah.
They serve no purpose whatsoever.
They don't. I mean, it's obvious that they just kind of started cutting those. Now, when I heard that, when I read that, and I was like, okay, now it makes sense. Because they would randomly just cut for like a minute or two of this weird dancing. And then like these guys would come in and out and then they would just leave. And then it was like, okay, so what's happening? But
so one of the first times that they seduce in their dreams, some mutineers to come in. Right. So they get the Balerians get put in this just empty warehouse part of the ship. Right. There's nothing in there.
Yeah.
And I guess it's also guarded because the commander says don't let people interfere with them, right?
Yes.
And so they do the first dream walk thing, and two of the mutineers come and knock on their door. And one of the Balerians opens the door and says, oh, I'm glad you're here. And then immediately the guard that was at the door said, you can't talk to them. They're off limits. And the door shuts and that's the end of the scene.
Right? Yeah, that's it. That was it.
That's it. And so the what guard, the I guess the guard let them open the door, but then was, nothing else.
Like, yeah, he must have been just far enough away. He must have been looking at his phone, didn't realize they had opened the door.
Oh, hey, wait a minute.
Yeah. But so the mutiny guys, one of the things that's funny is so they drive around on these subfloors on bumper cars.
Little triangles.
Little triangles. I mean, it's like, it looks like a floor waxer bumper car thing. But literally the names of these things are called enforcers. It's like yep. Enforcer 1 is the first one you see. And when they sit in them, they're so close. Like, it's like they grab a steering wheel and it's like right in their face. Like, it's that close. Like, just doesn't make any sense. And then when they drive off, they drive as fast as someone walking.
Yep.
Because there is a scene where this rider is chasing someone in one, and there's someone in front of them, and the girlfriend is like running, Leah is running around, and she is running faster than they're moving because she shows up at like the next spot before they get there. And it's like,
oh man,
what are you doing here?
They're simultaneously so stupid, right? But so freaking cool at the same
they're
time.
They're so awesome.
And they, okay, so they immediately reminded me of, what's it called? Oh, Really Ball.
Oh,
and that
yeah.
whole that whole game.
God, that was awesome.
So for Alan's guests of the show, co-host of the show, for his bachelor party, we did this thing called Whirly Ball. And it's the fact that this exists is just so bizarre, because it is, well, the place that we went to looked like it was a converted movie theater. Right?
Yeah, it was.
Into kind of a family fun center type thing.
It had laser tag and a couple other things.
And one of the things was Whirly Ball. And so they took bumper cars, kind of. Well, I mean, there were bumper cars, right? But instead of having the overarm electricity thing, it was just derived from the floor. Yeah. And it was a game like basketball, part basketball, part scoop ball cup throw thing.
Yeah. Yep.
And bumper cars. And so you got,
that was awesome.
So there was this target up in the air, right, where a basketball hoop would be. Well, you're sitting down, right, in a bumper car, and you had to scoop ball your ball through this little square thing. And the funny thing is that there's no steering wheel. It was just this joystick thing that you either spun clockwise or counterclockwise, and you had a gas pedal. And so if you like spun it clockwise or something, you'd kind of go forward. And then if you did counterclockwise, you'd go reverse or something like that. I can't remember how you went left and right, but
I think
it was only, so fun was, to play, but looking so at it is so stupid.
So stupid.
Maybe we'll put up some B-roll of some high intensity whirl ball, really ball.
Well, yeah. Cause it's literally, you just see someone like whipping the joystick right and left, like
joystick around. And then, you know, having their scoop ball cups and like trying to pass it to each other and, you know, catching it, you know, on the move and then doing an alley-oop up into that hoop thing.
Awesome.
Anyways, that's what reminded those triangle cars. Okay. But yeah,
far more entertaining.
Okay.
So there is a part like, so they have the engines go down, homeboy gets teleported and they're like getting like a status update and they're like, well, we got to shut down 2/3 power on the engines. And then the next scene is just the ship flying by with full speed, full power. It was just all constantly, just constantly they would say stuff. And then the next scene would just be the total opposite.
So, okay. Around this exact same time, right? So the ship, you know, the engine explode or whatever. And shortly after that, this just random guy walks up to a little wall terminal thing, right? And it's just some cardboard switches, right?
Oh my God.
He calls into the bridge and says, and I quote, I wrote it down here. Yeah, just thought you should know that some strange women came aboard. Sorry, the information is so scanty, but I'll give you more as I get it. So he calls into the bridge.
We already know when they on the
already
ship.
Knew that the Valerians were aboard.
Oh gosh. Well, that scene is just like the one where they're a little bit later they're learning about, oh, we're missing weapons. And the dorky guy says, my printouts show we're short of ballistic explosives. Your printouts show is anybody could manipulate your printouts.
Okay, so that reminds, okay, so they have all the on the bridge, I guess, that's where it is, or whatever command center, right?
Is. Yeah,
they're all at computer terminals, right? Where it's this gigantic square thing with a screen in the middle, and then their keyboards on the wall too, and so they're sitting at looking at their information on the computer, but they can only analyze it if it's printed out, right? But then, so there was another scene where. So they send a guy, they send a guy to go check out all the explosives, right? They say, you know, go count them, right?
Make sure
go count our explosives. See if they're missing or not. Maybe your printout's wrong.
Yeah.
And so he's in the engine room, and he walks up. He's in the engine room, and he walks up to a wall with every other set in this. this movie is just a room with the biggest pipes, so many pipes on this ship, right? And so he walks up, random guy walks up to basically the side of a pipe. And it's okay, so it's a screen and then a telephone receiver. He picks up the telephone receiver and says, can you patch me into the bridge, please? There's some central operator that he talks to, and then they patch him into the bridge where a video conference starts.
Yes.
Right? So he had to use a phone to call an operator to initiate a video call with the bridge. And they're basically like, yeah, there's some bombs gone or something. I don't know. They're missing
something. But you're going to have to deliver this. You're going to have to deliver this to me directly. So.
Oh, that's right. Okay. He says the information to the person. Yep. And she says, come tell me again in person. Okay. He has his printout. And he's going. And then Dungaree or whoever like intercepts him. And
Callahan.
Callahan.
Calgary. They intercept the message. So they're also listening to it.
So and
they basically kill him.
Yeah.
They kept using the same thing. They said, join me or the deep freeze.
Yeah.
But you never got to see what the deep I guess you do see.
Yeah, you kind of did with the old guy, right? Yeah. And they're all the bodies on the clothes hangers or something. Yes.
I have two other things.
Okay. Yeah.
So when the pilot gets on, they're talking to him and they ask him, how was the new high density atomizer escape system? And he's like, I don't know how it works. The guy with me did, but he's dead. But yes, I know that it works short distances. Basically the seed. And he's dead now. So I don't, no one knows how it works.
I know it works short distance. He was literally transported an inch away from his ship.
Well, yeah.
Oh, incredible. My God. This freaking pilot, man. What's his name? Dodge Ryder or something?
Dave Ryder.
Dave Ryder.
But it was like after he saves Leah from that explosion, like they're having that back and forth. And he's like, listen, lady. And she's like, I'm doctor.
Yeah.
And he's like, Captain General, I have to go file my reports. And then he just walks off.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So he goes up to the commander, right? Yeah. So he saves her, right? And they go up to the bridge, I guess, right? And
sure.
And okay. So yeah, he says he freaks out about being yelled at, right? And then lists a bunch of technical reasons for why the professor couldn't escape. It was like, well, my D7-8, you know, ejector system wasn't, you know, partially N7-11 or whatever. And then he just freaks out immediately. And he says, I have to go file my report. To who? <Yeah. laughs> He came from some other group of humans, right?
Like, doesn't make any sense.
And then,
I mean,
you come to find out that the daughter is so pissed off about this because she, this professor dying, right? Because she learned everything she knew from the professor.
Yes.
But again, from where? The people on this ship.
Apparently he just.
Were the only humans. They've been on this generations long journey through space.
And they don't mention the fact that there's any true aliens or anything, so it's not like he's maybe he went to see, I don't know.
Make any sense. But this pilot, he freaks out over the smallest little things, right? Oh, okay, gosh. So then he freaks out, storms off. And then the next scene or the scene after that is just this dance club scene, right? Where it's
oh my gosh. gosh.
This 80s music and stuff. And
the scene was
the
so
whole
good.
Crew are just, they're just dancing like,
it's like 80s dance party.
But half of them have hula hoops.
Yeah.
Right. And so that's the whole vibe, right? Is dancing in this club with a hula hoop. Again, they're surrounded by pipes, right? So they had one set and they just had to just keep reusing it, recycling it and stuff, right? Okay. So it's the pilot's in there. You know, he's vibing out. He's apparently over.
He's not vibing out. He was sitting at a table in a wife beater with an empty martini glass that was made of plastic. He was sitting over there with a bubble machine behind him, just watching. Apparently, the part I didn't understand is all of a sudden she starts dancing like seductively towards him, and I was like, "What is happening?" I thought it was a different woman because I was like, "What? They just had a blowout 2 minutes ago," and all.
No, right? Oh, but he's smiling at her, right? He's smiling, grooving and stuff. He's like, "Oh, yeah, she's dancing." She's got a hula hoop now. Oh, yeah. And so she walks up to him because they're flirting, they're, making eye contact from across the dance floor, right? She's got her hula hoop. She hula hoops with a different dude, right? And it's kind of, looking over his shoulders like, oh, do you see this hula hoop action? This could be you or could it not be you? I don't know. We were kind of fighting and stuff. And so she eventually walks up over to him. He's kind of smiling again. And she says, so are we good and stuff? And he says, no, I'm still mad. But I'll get over it someday. Yeah. She's the one who just lost a mentor, best friend, confidant, right?
Whatever.
He's the one that's all pissed off about getting yelled at for it. And okay, so then they spy from across the dance floor, just some other character, some woman from the bridge, right?
It was the lady that said, bring me, I need to tell you, okay. Need to tell me this information in person.
Okay. Okay. So important news about the bombs missing, right? And she says, bring it up to me immediately. And so when that guy just didn't show up, right? Because he's dead. She just went dancing. and so then Calgary shows up with some goons.
Obviously, everyone went dancing because that is true. There's only 32 casts on this whole thing, and I think they all were in this scene.
Yeah. So to recap, up until this point, a bunch of alien space fighter pilots just got blown out of the sky, blown out of space from space pirates. Some strange alien Balerian woman came on board, and they are down to 2/3 power. They're all at the dance floor, another day, right?
Just another day.
It's 5 o'clock. And you got to go dance. And so the daughter, she sees, at this point, you don't know what the daughter's job is or what she does at all, right? Mm-hmm. And so, but she's on the bridge a lot. And so she sees one of the other, these other bridge officers, and Calgary comes up. At this point, she has no idea to suspect Calgary of any wrongdoing. Right. Calgary just kind of talks to her, and that she just starts walking away. And the daughter says, I think she's getting arrested. And the pilot says, let's go check it out. And so they just start following them, right? And then they find her dead. And then they do this chase scene.
Oh, my God.
They do this chase scene that leads just fucking nowhere, right?
Well, okay, so... They jump into the bumper cars.
Oh, chase people. Okay, I'm totally forgetting. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, so they're chasing in the bumper cars, but there's a part where, so the bad guys jump in, there's one guy in the front driving, and then the guy in the back where they stand behind him.
He's a gunner.
And take off. Yeah, he's a gunner. But then the next scene is they jump in one, and then all of a sudden the doctor daughter has a bazooka.
Yeah, I know. Full-on bazooka, rocket launcher.
Bazooka out of nowhere. But while they're driving around and shooting these lasers, whoever was doing the special effects, kudos to them, but the lasers were literally going everywhere. The barrel is shooting straight ahead, and it shot straight into the ground, and then it would shoot straight to the left, straight to the right, straight up, straight down. It was total chaos. You didn't know where this thing was going to shoot from.
Yeah.
So they never hit each other. It was just constantly just shooting everywhere. Like, it didn't make any sense.
Yeah. Okay. So that they go on this. Is this the time where they go on this huge chase and then they chase them into that room with the old guy and all the people that were frozen?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
Okay.
But then but right when they get in there, it cuts back to the commander, Santa Claus, and they have all their spreadsheets out.
Yeah.
Because they're still trying to figure out what happened to the docking bay and what incident happened. So they have all these binary printouts of.
Data. But one of the funny things about that scene as it opens, so it flashes back to the bridge, and the woman that they just killed was just back at the bridge, right?
Well, yeah, they didn't have enough gas.
And she's just front and center. It's not like she's kind of in the background that you could maybe spy. They start the scene on her face.
Yes.
And then like do a wide pan to see the rest of the people there.
Well, so this was one of the lines from the commander when he was looking after he was looking at the data with his number two or whatever. So we need to keep this top classified secret.
Oh my god!
What classified kind of secret? What kind of line is that? Okay.
So there is a funny, there's another funny line that when he's, so it's the commander and commander's captain? Like the second command, right?
Weren't they called, they were saying captain and commander, weren't they? I don't know.
Yeah, but I thought that is the other way around. Who, I don't know, who cares? But anyways, the number two guy.
There's everything wrong here, so.
Right, it looks like they're sitting in these space chairs on the bridge that are just so tall compared to them. It looks like they're slouching. Yes. It looks like they're just lounging in these on the bridge.
Such
just
a in weird a couch. Angle. The way they shot it too is
it's like from above them, right? Yeah. It's from above them. It looks like they're just chilling on a couch. And he says, because the commander says, "What do you think?" Like, that's it. What do you think?
What do you think?
And he says, "Well, I think whoever did this knows that we're on a spaceship." What the fuck kind of line is that? "I think whoever did this knows we're on a spaceship." You mean the person that was on the spaceship to sabotage the spaceship?
Yeah, no shit. Oh, gosh.
And so, okay. So then it cuts back to the pilot and the daughter, the doctor daughter. And they come into this white room that I guess the daughter's never seen before. She spent her entire life on this ship, has no idea where she is right now.
Yeah.
And this random old guy comes out and says, "You must be looking for Calgary or something, right? Let me show you my collection of bodies here."
Vacuum.
There's a bunch of bodies.
Locker.
So it's four bodies, human bodies, just hanging on by a clothes hangers. And they're like, what is this?
This is weird.
What is this place? And there's no reaction at all. It's like, "Hey, look at my collection of bodies hanging up right here. Huh. What is this?"
Doesn't the old guy
outlines their fucking evil plan to them? He says, "Oh yeah, well, these are the bodies that Calgary, you know," he's amassing this entire mutinous army of the entire security force, and the people that don't go along with them, they usually just get jettisoned into space or get frozen for later rehabilitation. These are a few of them. And they're like, "Cool."
It was the most anticlimactic. Literally people hanging on hooks. He's just like,
he outlines the whole plan. They're like, "Okay."
Okay. Well, then it goes to, I think it just goes to, Well, Callaghan chases Ryder and Hula Girl, or Leah. I've called her Hula Girl for a long time in my notes. But then they get, the commander starts like deep thinking about like what the next steps are. And then that's when the Balerians get to him and he meets one and she like touches him. And then he's like, okay. I guess I do. I need to make Ryder the new ship commander.
Yeah. That's the revelation, right? Okay, so
okay, let's throw a party.
So right, okay, yeah. Okay, so Ryder and Dr. Daughter come back to the bridge and they say, "Hey Dad, yeah, you know that the bomb that blew up? Yeah, it turns out that's Callaghan, the head of security. We saw him kill one of the bridge officers that actually standing right there, but we saw him kill her and drove away, and then we met this old guy and told us everything. Okay, thanks for finding that out. I hereby promote you, Ryder, to wing commander. Commander of our wing squadron."
Yeah, commander of our wing squadron.
Congratulations. And immediately,
congratulations, let's have a cocktail party.
Immediately Cosmos for everybody. A party.
And there is a naked woman there, for whatever reason.
So at this point, the command structure knows about the insurgency mutiny, right? They know that they're down on power. They just promoted, for all intents and purposes, an alien, right? Some other branch of humanity, right? That
right. Is yeah, they thought they were the only unknown, ones, but surprise.
To their commander of their wing squadron, and they immediately throw a cocktail party. And so we're talking maybe 20 seconds have elapsed, right? To congratulations, yeah. You're the new wing commander. Boom, oh, champagne pops, party time. And Ryder says, "You know, I'd like to stay at this party and stuff, but where's Daisy? Where is she? Yeah.
Where's Leah?
Where's Leah?
I need to take her to Pound Town."
And the commander, this is his daughter, right? He says,
"Yes."
He says, Leah? Like he'd never heard of her before. Leah. I think you know where to find her.
I think you know where to find her.
And so it cuts to her garden, which is a couple of green shrubs amidst more pipes and tubes and stuff.
Giant pipes, yeah.
And I guess that's her job. She just grows plants in pipes.
Yeah, she's a doctor, and so she must be a doctor of arborists.
Botanist, right?
Botanist.
And so they just, you know, immediately. So the commander sees Ryder go off, right? Pans yep. to him. Ryder's walking off in the distance. Cuts back to the commander. Number two slowly gets up behind his shoulder, you know, just kind of creeps up into the frame. Commander says, "Love." Or something love. Stupid like that.
That was love. It. Yeah.
They've known each other for a total of 5 minutes at this point, I think. Totally.
Was and, the first introduction, the first half of the time they've known each other, she hated him. So,
and he hated the fact that she was complaining about.
He couldn't get over it either,
right? So obviously they're, you know, doing some stuff in the pipes. Again, not only is so they are completely aware of the fact that their entire security for the ship is they know that they're mutineers, right? Yeah. They know that they're low on power.
Yep.
And that there's pirates lurking about, and that there's strange women on board, and they're not just matter. Doing pipe stuff while also a party's happening. And so then, sure enough, pirates show up, right? Red alert. Two pirate ship come, and they make this announcement, surrender, you know, or what else, we're going to, you know, destroy you and stuff. And so even though they immediately start just nuking the Southern Sun, right? They just don't even bother for them to cease fire or surrender, right?
Yeah.
And I guess this is the whole plan of the mutineers, right? They want to sabotage the ship so that they can sell the ship and its goods and its people to the pirates so that they can get some cash and go settle on some planet.
Yep. That's right. They're tired of being on the planet.
Settle on some planet. Just yeah. some random ass planet. Yeah, right?
We'll figure it out later.
Okay, so red alert, right? Freaking pirate ships are in here. 2v1. Southern Sun is getting blasted. And it cuts to the bridge. The party that they just had a party. Right? They're clearing going. Away they're clearing away the cups and stuff, and you know, they had trash bags and whatever, and they're clearing all that away. The commander just kind of casually walks over to a council, flips a switch, and both pirate ships explode.
It was the greatest thing ever.
Two missiles shoot from the Southern Sun, and both pirate ships go supernova.
Yep.
Threat over.
Is that classic, like, red, lift the red tag, the red yep. tab, and just flip yep. the switch.
Flip the switch, and just one switch, two missiles come out, both ships gone.
That's
right?
It. Doesn't matter.
And so the very next scene, so there's someone comes on the PA and says, or no, they don't even, okay, the PA is later. The next scene is the exact same opening to the party. They throw another party, and it's the exact same scene. Of them popping champagne and the naked girl in the front of the... Yeah. It's literally the same.
It was amazing. So,
but then someone comes on the PA, shipwide PA, right?
Right.
Says, we have successfully defended the Southern Sun against the pirate attacks. We must now focus on internal problems. They make it seem like, you know, there's, you know, some, you got some toilet paper issues and there's some pipes clogged and, you know, don't use subsector C toilets or whatever. I'm like, we got a couple of things got going on. Celebrate, but
yeah,
there is some stuff going on. Okay. So then it cuts to the pilot. And he comes just running into the engine room or somewhere, right? And he gets on this really high catwalk. And
comes the speech, baby.
Is chatting, it's doing this epic speech to about eight people, right? There's eight people in this room.
They only have 32 casts. They only have 32 casts. And there's one old guy, which I think is the commander, just put in a white suit so he can shoot.
So, okay, so the pilot.
Anyways, sorry.
Okay, so the pilot is the new wing commander, right? Which,
yeah,
I believe is a term is an officer of probably space fighter craft, that kind of thing,
yes.
right?
I
you know, like a squadron command, like a pilot squadron leader, right. whatever, right? For
right, which we've seen wing commander, so we do know that
that's
wing
right.
commander means you fly and you also battle with
that's
weapons
right.
and your hands.
So. Oh, that's right. Okay, so that I guess this makes sense then, because he's named wing commander, and he walks into the engine room and tells the engineers that he outlines this whole plan, and here's what it is, done in three stages. All right, everyone, we gotta get ready to fight. Okay, I want three groups. First group is gonna make some weapons. Yes. The second
make
group
some weapons.
Is gonna act as soldiers. The third group is gonna get some food and supplies. Let's get out there and kick some ass. Yeah. And so okay, well I forgot one thing. He says. Okay, so he says, he outlines the three. Number one, we got to make weapons. Number two, we got to act as soldiers. Number three, we got to get out there, food and supplies. Like,
where are you going to get
food and supplies? Where are you going to get food and supplies?
You're on a ship.
But okay. Okay, then he says this, and I wrote this down. I suggest, he's the wing commander, and one of his first commands is, I suggest, right? I suggest we close up all the entrances and exits to the engine room. We're going to go out there and never let them take us over. We'll get back in here. So let's go out there and kick some ass. He says, stand here. Go out there. To stay in here, let's go out and kick some ass. But also, who are these people? Right?
They're just...
They're engineers.
That's the part that doesn't make sense. It seems like Ryder is the only person that knows how to fight. They say that multiple times. Like, he's the only one with battle experience. It's like, okay. The next part is Callaghan has the commander's daughter.
Yeah.
He goes and takes her.
You know where she was? In her...
Sleeping.
Pipe. She was in the pipes and the plants and pipes.
That's right.
Yeah. Right? She knew that Callaghan was out there, that the entire security force was a liability.
Well, Ryder did too. Ryder did too, but he just left her behind.
And she's just with her plants. And so, yeah, of course they take her, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And the whole point of this,
take her
right,
to the freezer. Yep.
Is they're going to torture her, right? Super scary, spooky stuff.
Ooh, Callaghan is
off
real good.
The rails in terms of how far he'll go. Keep in mind, the pirates are gone. Their entire plan did hinge on selling the ship and crew to the pirates, who are now dead.
Yeah. They needed some redemption, though. They need to.
But
they ain't gotta go out alone. Gotta
so bang. He says he takes the daughter, straps her to a table, takes out this laser tube, says, "You know what I don't know, but I do know, and I'm familiar with pain." Right? I know pain. Baby. And so you'll talk. Right? Believe me, you're going to talk.
Oh, she's going to talk after
so,
this.
Because she's the commander's daughter, he thinks that she has all the access codes, right? In the countermeasures. That's what they said. Right. They know the countermeasures. Keep in mind, he stole the bombs at will, right?
Right.
Like, walked in and stole the bombs, stole everything, sabotaged
allegedly
the engines, right?
Right.
And so he pulls out this laser drill and says,
this is awesome.
You know how I'm going to get you to talk? I'm going to burn your teeth.
I'm going to use this laser on your tooth. It's much like old dental equipment. You wouldn't know.
So his form of torture is to start burning her tooth off.
Lasering her tooth. Laser. Just, to be fair, it was an incisor, so you know,
and,
it could
and
really
so,
do damage.
But maybe that is an effective method of torture. I don't know. But if you want the torture-y to talk afterwards, would you go after their mouth? I don't know. Right? Their ability to communicate?
Yeah, right.
So he's just shining this laser, right, into her tooth.
And
she's, you know, kind of casually, you know, kind of just kind of casually trying to deflect the laser beam, right?
Do you think they got inspired from Logan's Run and then they were trying to, like, you know, do a lower budget version of that, because you know, in the room where the lasers are shooting everywhere, and
maybe
that they
maybe
inspiration there, but anyways,
so okay, there's this other mutineer that we haven't talked about yet who is
like
the head
Farson?
is the head engineer,
yeah,
right,
yeah, yep.
So he ostensibly gave them access to the engine room or whatever, who cares, right?
Yep.
And he actually is recruiting his own band of mutineers,
right?
And had to kill one of his engineers that wouldn't play ball because it went against the laws of the galaxy,
right?
And
that was a...
And so he walks into the this other boss walks into the room while they're torturing the daughter. And says, "Huh, I see you got the daughter." And Callaghan stops, and he says, "Yeah, she's going to tell me the countermeasures." And he says, the other guy walks in and says, "Well, I guess I better get back to the engine room." And so Callaghan says, "Okay, I'll take you." And then they all leave. And... So there's one guy left
oh
with
my gosh.
with the prisoner, with the daughter, and he's at his wall counsel, right? And he makes a phone call to IT. Well,
yeah, he's tapping the screen because, you know, obviously it had blacked out, so he has to call IT, you know, to see if they'll fix it.
He says to the IT guy, did you catch this? This is what he says. Yeah, my computer's on again. I don't know if he just botched the line and they didn't do a retake, but he says,
probably just didn't.
My computer's on again. And the guy says, well, I can't get to it until, you know, next Tuesday or whatever. I'm swamped. Don't
get it until next week. What is happening? I can't get to it until next Tuesday.
I'm swamped. And the guy said, well, gee whiz, you know, I was like, can you do something for me here? And he says, don't worry, buddy. I got you. I wouldn't let you down. I'll get over there stat. Yeah.
Brother.
And so then the daughter's just on the table this whole time.
She's sitting there the whole time by herself.
And she just starts seducing him, right? And, you know, he comes over and she's out of her handcuffs and stuff, and she's seducing him, and she says, take off your jumpsuit. And he says, okay. And then she puts her foot up to his chest and stuff, and then they take his shirt.
He takes his whole suit off and it zooms in on his stomach. Like,
yeah. This is the most random shot.
What is happening here?
And so then, and then Ryder comes in right at that moment, right, where she kicks him and stuff. And then he's instantly incapacitated. And whatever they get a disguise. Right. And now they're skulking around, and now she gets a disguise or something. And then, they're skulking around the pipes. It's all quiet, stealthy, because the security mutineers are everywhere and they're on the pipes too. And they're creeping around. And then two guys randomly walk down some staircases, and he, you know, reaches through the stairwell slats and just kind of, you know, grabs their ankle a little bit, and one guy's dead instantly, and then the other guy just kind of tumbles and he's dead, right?
Yeah.
Nobody
was a match for Ryder. He was
What's special about these guys is these guys had little snowmobile goggles and stuff, and some head coverings of sort. So now they can skulk around a little bit easier, right? Because their faces are hidden. And they get to this completely wide open area of the ship, some engineering part or something. And one guy's just at a random desk, just in the middle of all of it.
Right.
And they come walking right by him, right? You know, just come, walk right by him. And he says, hey,
can I see your ID?
See some space ID.
Shoot him right,
and
in the
then
crotch.
They just shoot him right, and then they immediately take their ski goggles off.
I know.
So they were hidden.
Note how much time they spent on like getting the mask on, and then the first time they are asked about taking their mask off, they're immediately like, "Let's kill this guy. Let's take the mask off.
Right? And then they never had masks again. Right?
No.
And so I don't know. It all heads off to this major battle, right? And people just come pouring in. The bad guys just keep piling out of this catwalk and hatchway door and stuff, right?
It was confusing to figure out who was a good guy and who was a bad guy, because the white guys are bad because they work for the engineer guy. But then the red guys were part of Kalgan's team. But then there was also the people on the command floor. It was a little difficult to figure out who was actually good and bad.
I don't know. But a lot of people died. And literally every death resulted in the person dying falling off a catwalk.
Oh, hell yeah.
Every single person that
over
died.
Over the railing.
They had
over
to go
railing,
over the railing.
Over the railing. Yeah, that was one of the jokes that they made about.
Really, really funny. Yeah.
About OSHA coming in.
So then you find out. Then they realize that the head engineer is also a bad guy, right? Yep. They find this out on the bridge, and they make the comment, well, this is really serious because he knows all the countermeasures. So they had to tooth torture the daughter into finding out she's a botanist or something, right?
Right. Yeah.
What does she know? And they tooth torture the daughter to get the countermeasures when the deputy in chief of the mutineers knew the countermeasures the whole time. They have head of security and head of engineering as part of their plan, and they couldn't pull it off, right? But
this is where Ryder starts. Ryder just starts shooting everybody and killing everybody. He picks up a bazooka at one point and just starts killing people like three at a time, and they just keep falling off the rails.
So he he couldn't hit anybody with the pistol, right?
Right.
And then he pulls up the bazooka, and like you said, exactly three people at a time start dying. And then he picks up this flamethrower, and he just flaming it around.
He picks up a propane tank with a hose attached to it with a little pointer that's on fire. Like,
it was spray painted very rudimentary silver, right?
Yeah.
He's just literally just waving the fire around, right? And then guys are falling off of railings, and he's just like it's not going anywhere.
Yeah, but then at one point he puts so much flame down, the guys come up to the flames are like, ah, there's fire. I
quit.
I can't go through that. I gotta they literally go back. Come to the
wall of fire and they say, I quit. It wasn't getting shot at. It wasn't, you know, the fact that they're mutinying.
Fire.
As far as they knew, the only bastion of humanity, right? What are they going to do if they get into a planet? There's nothing there, right?
Nope.
They see a wall of fire. I quit.
I quit.
So the head engineer, so Caligan gets what looks like he killed at some point on the catwalk. And then it's just the head engineer. And he also has a limp this whole time that they kind of overplay. Right? He's got a cane and he can't walk or something. And so he gets, he sits down in the engine room. He kills every single engineer. Right.
Yeah, like
he comes
in one shot, snipes them all. Yeah.
And then all of a sudden there's people trying to escape from somewhere. And then he shoots all of them. Every single engineer on this ship is now dead. And then he crawls into this. What do they call it? A gas expulsion sump, which is just a little cutout on the floor.
It's a cutout on the floor. Yeah.
He crawls into it.
He crawls into it like he's trying to get into it to hide himself, because I think there's a pipe under him. So if they shoot it, it'll explode. I don't know.
But Ryder shoots it anyways.
Ryder's there. He realizes next to him is a grate, and that if he shoots it, the gas will fill. Fires the flame or shoots it, and then it's just a tunnel of gas to this guy and kills him.
It's a gas
explosion.
Meanwhile,
the doctor daughter is for some reason just scaling.
She Tarzans
down
in
on a rope.
Right? She Tarzans
what is
in.
She doing? What is she doing?
Becomes a liability because she was on the bridge or something, right? And then says, "I'm going down there," and she's instantaneously there, right? She took a back door. Yeah. Oh yeah, oh, right. Yeah. So the commander, she tells her dad, "I'm going." And she storms off. The commander doesn't say anything, right? It's not even a...
Yeah.
He says nothing. And number two says, "You sure you want to let her go?" And he says, again, "Love."
Love.
and then she's just Tarzaning into the engine room on some rope.
Yeah.
And just to get in the way, basically...
Yeah,
because then the writer has to go over to her.
He's worried about her getting shot.
Something, and then
he has to save her and all that stuff.
But then,
He blows up the engineer guy.
He blows it up, right? But then they instantly start another little tiff spat between the two of them. He says, "Why'd you come here? That was really dumb."
Yeah.
And she says, "Well, you needed help. I couldn't just stand by and let you, you know, do this alone." He says, "No, that was really, really stupid. Why did you come here? Actually, why didn't your dad let you come here?"
Yeah, why did your
dad
let you come?
And he's being all like chauvinistic and stuff and just treating her like shit. And she says, "Well, you know what? I don't have to say anything." And then all of a sudden, Caligan, Mach 12 on this triangle, car. Because they're now out in some causeway on this ship or something. And then here comes Caligan speeding towards him.
Yeah.
You know, a maniacal laugh because he's, you know, half dead at this point. And so
they just have a bumper. I mean, they have a bumper car war.
It's a bumper car war, right?
For like 7 minutes.
Okay. So the two of them. Yeah. Okay. Exactly. Right. Because they kill all the bad guys. Yep. They're the ones that didn't quit, right? Because of the fire.
Yeah.
And then the engine guy is dead. All the engineers are dead. Mm-hmm. And then there's like 16 minutes of runtime left at this point. Right. I'm thinking, what could possibly be left to tell here, right? And so sure enough, it's Caligan. And he comes on this triangle. And so then the two of them jump on in a triangle. And she's gunning again. She's got their bazooka and she's, you know, bazooka. And something happens where...
Ryder
just does a 180 or a 90 and just jettisons her off, right?
Yeah, she falls right off.
And he just peels out and goes after Caligan. And this is what you were talking about earlier. She just runs after them and catches up and outruns them, actually.
There's one scene where she literally runs to the spot, stops, sees them drive back. They're going the direction she came from, and she runs back.
Yeah. So, okay, so she stands, she now gets in the middle of this hallway thing. She's got her pistol, right? And she's aiming and shooting at both of them. And so she's trying to hit Caligan, right? And to blow him up or blow up the triangle. And she hits Ryder, blows up his car or something, right? It causes him to spin out, right?
Yeah, Ryder is like sitting sideways, like trying to like restart it and like... Get out of the way, get out of the way, get out of the way. Yep. And she's like,
and then she just gets run over, right?
Run over. Yeah.
And so, and then he gets his triangle uprighted and last dash heroics, he says, right? And then just does five barrel rolls out of this thing. He does a somersault into another like couple somersaults unnecessarily and then snipes that other triangle with his triangle from like 200 yards away, right? And Caligan just runs into it. This huge explosion. And Caligan they don't even check.
Flying over. Yeah.
Yep.
Didn't even check to make sure he's dead, but
yep.
Doesn't matter.
Anyways. Oh, I forgot that. Okay, so she's standing in the hallway, right? And she's, you know, sniping him and she already shot the pilot. So he's out and it's just those two. It's Caligan. He's, you know, charging towards her. And she says, "Take this, you space bitch." And he just runs her over.
Well, there's the other part too is right as Ryder like jumps off and then I think as Caligan's falling down, there's a part where he just does the whatever that thing is, gives the fist. And then it just cuts away. Yep. But it was just like this random like throwaway scene that they just had to add in at the end. And there's Caligan just burning alive. So I think
Ryder yelled so much in this movie. He yelled every single chance he could get. I'm already forgetting. Was there any resolution at all after they show Caligan and flames?
No idea.
Was there anything else on the bridge or anything after that?
No. The next scene is, he is kissing Leah, and then he says, "Does this mean you won't marry me?" And then he picks her up, carries her across the scene, and then they keep making out. It was like we couldn't move the camera.
And they walk 10 feet.
Yeah. It was like they're kissing in front of the camera, close up. And then they walk 10 feet back and then they keep kissing. And then the next scene is Caligan. They zoom in on his face and he's
crawled away. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That does this mean you won't marry me? I also noticed that. What does that mean? What is that supposed to mean?
Yeah. What does that mean?
They've gotten too many arguments already in the one day they've known each other.
Yeah. All right. A few tidbits on this. So all the space battle footage is actually Battlestar Galactica. So they just took it.
Wow.
They used it. So several shots are actually of the Galactica itself. They just show it in reverse. So David Winters was the director, but he had to drop out because he had a relative die. And then there's this Neil Sundstrom, who is co-director of this film. So he did most of it. But Sundstrom said that he was not pleased with the end result, blaming a lack of care and attention in production, and refused to be credited at anything more than a co-director. And then this is where Winters was trying to he was equally unhappy, and he was trying to replace his name to Smithy. So, but his contract wouldn't allow him to do it. And so this film was mostly shot in a factory warehouse. No surprise there.
That was obvious.
So obviously they knew there was lots of windows coming in during the daylight. So they tried to use the illusion that it was still in space by color filtering. So the sunlight looked orange or red. And I was like, I don't even remember that. It looked white to me.
Yikes.
But anyways. And let's see. They tried to get someone to insert a line about the light to do it. I think it got cut. And then the sequence of the Balerians was added in post-production after initial cut because the movie was far too short.
Yeah, there was no resolution with the Balerians either, right?
No.
They were just in that room still.
It reminds me of, what was that, Supernova? When they had to do all those extra recuts, and then it just totally changed what the movie was about. And it was just... Anyways.
Holy smokes.
Well, so score time.
This yeah.
This is the Ascension to 10 podcast. We rate on 11-point score. Top score being 10, top score being Ascension. I think I know what you're going to say, but maybe it'll surprise me.
I mean, this is, it's clearly an Ascension, right?
It's so
bad, right? But
oh my gosh,
unlike things like, I mean, it's so bad, it's funny kind of thing, but
yeah.
It's in the same vein as Death Race 2000, right? Where you can laugh at just how stupid it is, but
yeah, that's right.
But the like fact that they didn't
production quality and wise,
yeah, and they didn't like they didn't try to make a bad movie, right? This was them trying to make a good movie, and it
like
was
yeah,
just
I don't
so
think they were
stupid.
Yeah, like the intention wasn't to make it funny,
yeah,
but just the way things were, the way they wrote things and all that.
Yeah. So two ascensions.
Chalk it up.
Well. Okay. What's next on the docket?
Oh, I thought you were going to have one.
This was mine.
Well, it was a fan.
Shit.
Well, have you think about it. I have one other thing that I did want to mention. As part of our first episode, we talked about our favorite things. I think we talked about it on the Moms episode, like our top five movies and shows. And this past week, Jason David Frank passed away. He was the Green Ranger and White Ranger for Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. So it was a big part of my life, obviously, from 5 to 8, watching Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. And you know, if no one knows, the Green Ranger started out as a bad antagonist that was under control of Rita, and eventually became a true leader of the Power Rangers and found a true mentor in Zordon. But one of his co-stars, Austin St. John, who played the Red Ranger, was kind of talking about him passing. And he mentioned that he made this quote that said, "Once a Ranger, always a Ranger." So I just wanted to remember Jason David Frank because he brought a lot of joy to my life. And there is a potential movie coming out that's called The Legend of the White Dragon. That might be his last film, and it has a tie-in to Power Rangers. So
Green Ranger was the one that played the little sword flute, right? To summon the Loch Ness monster and stuff.
Yep.
Nice.
That was a good one. Then he got the White Ranger, and then he had the sword that had the little cat that talked.
So he was green, and then he went to the white? Or he then became the White Ranger?
Yeah, so he became a Green Ranger under the control of Rita. So his power was from Rita, and when he flipped to become a good guy, he lost his power. And then Zordon gave him power back, made him a White Ranger.
Okay, so as the White Ranger, that's when he had the little flute. He was like a little dagger thing that he would summon the dragon with.
I thought that was the green one. Oh, man.
It was when he had the vest, the half vest, half moon vest thing,
he had both,
right?
Yeah, he had on both of them.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't know.
I think it's Green Ranger. Yeah, it's Green Ranger. It's a little flute. And let's then go. He's a green badass. One. Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway. Okay, I picked a movie on that sad note. Sorry. A movie. we're gonna watch something I've actually been kind of wanting to see my whole life, but I'm gonna watch Masters of the Universe.
Ooh, Masters of the Universe. Which one's that?
I think that's with Dolph Lundgren, and I think that's He-Man.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I think. Yeah. Something like that.
Yeah, I remember I watched that when I was really young, so I don't really remember it. But I remember at the end, he says some line like, it's rock and roll, and then it ends.
Let's go.
So, sweet. Look forward to
that. I think that this will be in the same, I think it'll be pretty similar to Krull, maybe. Or similar, I don't know, similar aesthetic, I'm thinking.
Yep, that sounds good.
Okay.
Cool. No, I look forward to it. That sounds awesome.
Kill.
Well, as always, you can find us on our website, ascension210.com. You can find us on our socials, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, ascension210, and then on YouTube at ascension210 podcast.
That's right.
We do a video format of these episodes. If that's
links in the description.
Links in the scripts. Maybe Brian will join us someday once again. If not,
we'll
whatever.
Keep shitting on him.
I want to thank Alex Mielen for this recommendation again.
Yes,
that was
thank
a lot
you.
Of fun.
That was a
we
great
appreciate
one.
It. Yep. But until next time, he's Jad. I'm Spenny.
Bye.
Bye. Welcome to Ascension Return.